why does Luke suddenly give us 15 verses about the conversion of one individual guy? Sort of question, you see, you sort of think about it, you go, oh yeah, you know, we've been going through the book of Acts, and as you're reading, you just find like thousands of people are converted, and Luke just deals with it in a sentence. Yeah? So, you know, you've got, here we go. Those, Acts 2, after Peter preaches, those who accepted Peter's message are baptized, and about 3,000 people were added to their number that day. Right? 3,000 people, half a verse. Alright, Acts 4:4, many who heard the message believed, the number of many believed grew to about 5,000. So at least another 2,000 people dismissed in one verse. Not dismissed, summarized in one verse. Or later in Acts chapter 7, the word of God spread. The number of disciples in Jerusalem increased rapidly, and a large number of priests became obedient to the faith. Now, hard to know. What was it? Maybe another few hundred? Another couple of thousand? Who knows? But again, one verse. And then suddenly, we get to this guy, and it's like half a chapter is given to one story of one person becoming a Christian. And you're thinking, okay, there's something about this guy that is significant. Luke really wants us to get something in this passage. All right, now it might be because, you know, the guy's like a really important official. Like politically, this guy's an absolute player. All right, so it might be that Luke's kind of doing, you know, here's your A-list celebrity Christian kind of person. You know, big, high-profile guy becomes a Christian. And, you know, and we do this today, don't we, in the church today. You know, somebody famous becomes a Christian and suddenly we roll them out and it's like, look, cool people, important people, powerful people can become Christians too. I don't think that's what's going on here at all, actually. I think Luke would be quite aghast at the thought that we might think he was drawing attention to this person because politically this guy is a player on the international scene. Now, I think though if we zoom out from the story of this, from the story of one individual, and look at it from a slightly different perspective, we might begin to get a sense of why Luke is so excited about this guy becoming a Christian. If we think of it not just as an individual kind of conversion story, but if we think about it at a kind of macro level, a kind of global level, then we'll see that this guy becoming a Christian actually has huge significance. And that this story has a lot to teach us about the growth of the church, the growth of the gospel, and kind of the maturing of the church. Now, I want to think about some of that now, and then we're going to come back and look at a little bit more of it later in the service. Now, we're told three things about this guy, apart from the fact that he's a political player. All right, one is he's a eunuch. Right, let me just be said, we're not going to get into that this morning, okay? There's a lot going on with that, and Isaiah and stuff, but we're not going to do that this morning. But he's converted to, I was supposed to say Judaism, he's a convert to Judaism. So he's just been up to Jerusalem to celebrate the feast, a big kind of Jewish festival thing. And he's a convert to Judaism. And we're told he's an Ethiopian. All right, and those last two things, those things I think are the part of why Luke really focuses in on this guy. I want to think, first of all, about the fact that he is somebody who has converted to Judaism. Sorry, I should say, that's going to annoy me all morning, the fact that it's not the right word on the screen. I'm a pedant when it comes to things like that. All right, so what's going on here? Now, think about this. At the start of the book of Acts, Christianity is basically a Jewish sect. You know, looking at it sociologically and stuff, Christianity is a Jewish sect. There's a handful of people in one part of the world, of the globe, and they follow Jesus. Okay? When you get to the end of the Bible, you get to the book of Revelation, one of my favorite verses in the whole Bible. you got this glorious vision of the church triumphant at the end of the age. And you've got this extraordinary statement about it, this great multitude that no one could count. They're from every nation, every tribe, every people, and every language, and they're standing before the throne of God and before the Lamb. And the question is, how does the church get from being a provincial sect of kind of Judaism to being this kind of global phenomenon, multi-ethnic, multi-racial, multicultural phenomenon? How does that happen? Because, you know, the church in Acts wasn't any better at change than the church in Ipswich 2,000 years later. All right? Churches are not good at embracing change. And you think about the change that goes on from Acts chapter 1 to kind of Revelation. That is a pretty big change. All right? And one of the things that I love, and I think this gives us such a glimpse into the heart of our God. One of the things I love in the book of Acts is that Luke is showing us how gentle God is as he leads the church into change. All right? He doesn't just go, right, you go from here to here in one step, done. This is where I'm going, and if you're not on board, just get out. He doesn't do that. All right? He's really gentle with the church. He gently but relentlessly, and that's important as well, he's gentle, but he's not going to give way on this. He kind of expands the vision of the church and the evangelistic heart of the church until it becomes big enough to embrace what he is calling the church to be. Right? And I think sometimes, we need to hear this, because sometimes we think, okay, I don't really have a heart for evangelism. I don't really have a heart for the lost. I don't really do the whole active sharing of my faith thing. And we sort of think we have to go from that to being like a full-on Billy Graham sort of like Bible-thumping evangelist in one step. And I think, no, let's just learn from the Bible. God doesn't ask us necessarily to make huge leaps and transformations like that. He takes us one step at a time, and we just need to worry about taking the next step into what God is calling us to be as individuals and as a church. So, you know, you start with Acts 2, all right, where Peter is preaching in Jerusalem, and there are a lot of people there from different backgrounds, but they are all Jews, all right, and that's where we start. You move, by the time you get, well, you start to move out, you know, then some Samaritans get to be exposed to the gospel and become Christians. And then you get some Gentiles, but Gentiles who, Acts 8, the story we're reading at the minute, Acts 8, you get a Gentile, but it's a Gentile who's converted to Judaism. So he's gone from total thoroughbred Jews, as it were, ethnical Jews, to Samaritans, to Gentiles who've converted, a Gentile who has converted to Judaism. So just slowly pushing out. And it's not actually until Acts 11 that you get to the point where you've got Gentiles who are becoming Christians from a totally Gentile background. So you see, for Luke, this is a big deal because this is a key step in that process of the church cultivating a heart and a vision for evangelism and for mission in their own backyard, but in the world that is big enough for the vision and the heart of God. All right, and so you've got this sense of, you know, Luke picks this out and wants us to engage with this because it shows us how God is growing the church from being this Jewish sect to being this global, multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-racial phenomena. All right? So that's one part of it. But there's also a sense in which this is a very key moment in the history of the church. You see, Jesus in Acts 1 had said, you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in all Judea, in Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. And this moment in Acts 8 with this Ethiopian guy, this is a key moment in the fulfillment of this prophecy. Because, of course, this guy is, well, he's Ethiopian. And he's going home to Ethiopia, where he lives, where he comes from. Because he's Ethiopian. Right? In other words, this is the moment when the gospel jumps continents. Right? There's a guy, I was talking about him yesterday in the Bible read-through breakfast, looking at Matthew's gospel. There's a guy called Irenaeus. And he was a bishop in Lyon, in what we would now today call France, way back in the 2nd century. All right, so, and he tells the story in one of his books. He writes a book called Against Heresies, and he tells the story of what happens when this Ethiopian goes back to Africa and takes the gospel. And he's like this amazing evangelist, this guy. And through him, through this Ethiopian eunuch, the church in Africa is established for the first time.
There's a thing going on with Solomon. We'll deal with that another day. But in terms of Acts, this is the
gospel going to the ends of the earth. This is a really key moment as the gospel moves from one continent into another. And it might be that that's why Luke is saying, look, I really want you to see this guy. I want you to see him becoming a Christian because he is such an important link in the chain. And what's critical for us in terms of church history is that North Africa, for the next 500 years, after the ending of the book of Acts, North Africa is where all the action is in terms of global Christianity. So this one guy becomes a Christian, and he goes out, and he's faithful with preaching the gospel. He's planting churches all down through Africa on his way home to Ethiopia. And those churches, for the next 500 years, become absolute global players in terms of church history. So big, big names like Cyprian and Tertullian and Athanasius and Augustine, right? These big theologians of the early church whose writings we are still reading, they were all African, North African Christians. They are the guys who fought for and defined and defended the faith that we still confess today. The creeds that we often say in our services were written by African Christians who became Christians because of the story that we are reading this morning in Acts chapter 8. You see, in the history of the church, this guy's conversion, you read at one level and it's just another story of another person becoming a Christian. But when you take a step back and look at this from a global perspective, all right, you begin to realize that actually a whole new continent is being opened to the gospel as the church is learning to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. And that's why I think Luke wants to take time telling this story, celebrating what God is doing in the life of this guy. And I want you to get a sense as you read this, like for Luke, there's a real excitement and a joy as he tells the story of this guy becoming a Christian because he knows what it means. We begin to see something of God's heart on display as he gets involved to save this guy. And we'll think about that in a few minutes. Okay, so Acts chapter 8. Now, we've thought about this at a macro level. We thought about it in terms of, you know, globally what God is doing in the life of the church and in the cause of the gospel. But it is the story of one person becoming a Christian. So, yeah, you've got to ask the question, all right, what can we learn about
what's going on here? What can we learn about evangelism and mission? Even when it's cross-cultural, because in a sense it's the same wherever we're doing it. The same basic things are happening. And it is worth saying, you know, some aspects of this story are, because of the significance of this, I think some aspects of the story are kind of unique. So, you know, there's a lot of sort of angelic visitation and the Spirit speaking and things like that going on. And I think Luke would be pretty horrified if we came away from that story thinking, well, unless an angel appears to me, and unless I hear the Spirit of God speak audibly, and unless I'm like physically translated from one place to another miraculously, then obviously I'm not going to share the gospel. I don't think that's the take-home message in terms of evangelism from this passage. I think some of those things are happening because this is such a key moment in world history. But there are a lot of things in here that I think we can learn about. We can learn from this passage what's going on. And the first is that Philip clearly feels that he has a mandate to preach the gospel. Alright, for as far as Philip is concerned, he is going to talk about Jesus with people. He's going to do that. It's not an option. It's not a, well, if the opportunity presents itself, or if they ask a question, or if I feel it's appropriate, then maybe I'll, you know, begin to talk about it. No, for Philip, I will talk about Jesus, period. That's it. He's got the authority to do that, and he's always thinking that. So you see this in this passage a couple of times. It's not just Philip. It's not just that he's got a weird kind of personality that keys into this sort of thing. This is how the church thinks. Acts 8:4, those who had been scattered preached, this is after persecution in Jerusalem, so a lot of the Christians have to leave. Those who have been scattered, they preach the word wherever they went. All right, wherever I am as a Christian, I'm going to talk about Jesus. That's their mindset. That's their mandate. You get it as well with Philip. After this, he appears at Azotus and travels about. What does he do? Well, he preaches the gospel in all the towns until he reaches Caesarea. All right, this is what, if you were listening yesterday to the overview I did of Matthew's gospel for the Bible read-through breakfast, you'll see that for Jesus, this is absolute. You know, when Jesus thinks about discipleship, our being involved in making other disciples is an integral part of that. You see, I think I was saying this yesterday morning as well, so sorry if you were listening. But I think in the West, we've been taught that you can be a Christian without being active in sharing your faith. So I think it's quite common for us to think, well, I'm a Christian. Whether I share my faith or not is kind of a further question to the question of my own discipleship. And I was trying to say yesterday morning, I think when Jesus teaches about discipleship, that's not how he sees it. Disciples make disciples. That's as integral to our own discipleship as it is to somebody else's. You know, and that's how Jesus trains his disciples, to be disciple-making disciples. And so you get to Matthew 28, of course, and Jesus sends the church out. He says, right, I'm about to go back to my Father, and all authority is given to me, and I, all right, the one in whom all authority is given, I am telling you to go into my world and to make disciples of all nations. All right, so the church hears that and takes it very seriously. All right, we have the authority to preach the gospel. We don't have to earn that authority. We don't have to ask for it. We don't need permission. We don't need to wait for somebody else to ask a question. We don't need to listen if somebody tells us not to do it. Because the one who has all authority has told us to do it. Alright, and so this is what's going on in Philip's head. He understands that he has a mandate to preach the gospel. And you see this in the church in Acts. Wherever they go, what are they going to do? They're going to teach people about Jesus. Alright, now something really interesting to note about this story. I don't know if you noticed, I said earlier, there's a lot of, you know, angels appear and the Spirit of God is speaking audibly and moving Philip around geographically and stuff. Now, it's really interesting, as you read through the story, there's a lot of supernatural things going on. You know, the angel of the Lord appears to Philip and directs him, takes him to a particular road. The Spirit points out a particular chariot to come alongside. You know, and it's all very, we'll look at this in a minute, it's all very orchestrated. You know, Philip is being told exactly what to do and how to do it, except the angel or the Spirit of God never actually tell Philip to talk to this guy about Jesus. It's really interesting, isn't it? And I think the reason is because they don't need to. They know that because Philip understands what it is to be a disciple himself, the angel and the Spirit know that Philip will talk about Jesus. All I need to do is put Philip next to this guy and Philip will take care of everything else. Really interesting. All right, the other thing that we've got here is Philip has a method in sharing the gospel. There is a way of doing evangelism, and it is very simply this. He teaches the Ethiopian about Jesus from the Bible. That's what he does. You know, I've been to so many conferences in my life on evangelism and mission, and these big, complex ideas about how to do evangelism, big cultural studies, and, you know, understand your society, and, you know, how to get into the worldview of whoever you're speaking to, and all of this. Philip doesn't do any of that. Huge cultural barriers here. All right? But what's Philip just teaches this guy about Jesus from the Bible. And I want to say to you, it's that simple. Right? That's what evangelism is. That's what mission is. Teaching people about Jesus. Now, whether you do it with a scroll or a book open in front of you, and it's like, okay, chapter and verse, you know, or whether you do it implicitly, like I'm telling you things about Jesus from the Bible, even though neither of us have a Bible open, that doesn't matter. What is the method of evangelism that we learn from the church is teach people about Jesus, which is one of the reasons we're really kind of exploring using this at MIU. If you've heard Tracy, if you've been watching our online services, Tracy's been talking about this a little bit. The word one-to-one. I do this with a guy. And we're just, it's doing this. It's teaching people about Jesus from the Bible. So, you know, you both get one of these. And, you know, there's let's get a picture of it. There's a part of the Bible here. This is John, John 2. All right, and then you go down and there's like little notes that help people understand what's going on in the passage. There are questions to discuss or ask or to reflect on. And it's just very, very, really simple. Really simple. The book does the work for you. And it's just like, all right, how do I teach people about Jesus from the Bible? That's it. And interestingly though, let me just say this as well. He also teaches the Ethiopian how to respond to Jesus. It's interesting. There's the one-to-one. If you want to look at that, have a look on the website. He also teaches the Ethiopian how to respond to the gospel. It's interesting, isn't it, that the Ethiopian asks Philip, not how do I become a Christian, but he says, look, there's some water. Can I be baptized? And it's as part of telling this guy about Jesus, Philip has been explaining to him, how do you respond to this? You respond by being baptized. That's the way into the life of Christ and the life of the church. And so the Ethiopian is like, right, there's some water. Can I be baptized? And I think sometimes one of the reasons we see so little fruit from our evangelism is that we don't actually tell people how to respond to Jesus. Let's tell you about Jesus. I'll tell you about Jesus. Here's what Jesus said. Here's what Jesus did. And we don't actually say, and if you want to be a part of this, let me tell you how that happens. And so it's just worth bearing in mind that when Philip is explaining about Jesus, he's also teaching the guy how to respond to Jesus. All right, so he's got a mandate, he's got a method. Do you like this? This doesn't happen often. Three-point sermon, all beginning with the same letter. I just don't want you to miss this. This is a rare thing. All right, he's got a mindset in sharing the gospel. He has a way of thinking about what is going on as he is talking to this guy about Jesus. All right? And the way Philip thinks about evangelism, I think, is so exciting. And it's really liberating. So I'm just going to back up a little bit and just highlight a couple of verses for you from the Bible. All right? Acts chapter 2, the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Okay? Now there's loads. I just thought for the sake of time, I'll just put two up on this. Okay? This is another really famous one. This is when Paul's talking to Philippi. He's talking to a group of people, and there's a woman called Lydia, and we're told the Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. Alright, when you just look at those two verses, the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. The Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. Who's doing evangelism here? Alright, I mean, if you think about it, remember back in Acts chapter 1. Yeah, in my former book, as Luke is introducing the book of Acts, in my former book, Theophilus, I wrote about all that Jesus began to do and to teach until the day he was taken up to heaven. And for years we've kind of gone, all right, so what Acts is about is what Jesus continues to do and to teach after he's been taken up to heaven. That's what the book of Acts is about. So we're looking at all this evangelism and mission going on, and the question is, who's doing that? All right, and the answer from the book of Acts is Jesus. All right, who adds people to the church? Is it Peter by his brilliant gifted evangelism? No. The Lord adds to the number daily. Is it the Apostle Paul because he's got the right techniques? No. It's the Lord who opens people's hearts to respond to the message of the gospel. All right, so Philip, all right, Philip has this deep sense of the fact that this is something Jesus is doing. Now for Philip, it's right front and center because, you know, there's angels and the Spirit of God, and it's all like, all right, you know, he's literally being moved like a chess piece around the board, isn't he? And it's like, right, okay, clearly the Lord is doing something here. But the thing for Philip is, I get to be a part of this. I get to be a part of what Jesus is doing. And it's clear Jesus has been working in this guy's life. He's converted to Judaism. He's sitting there reading the Bible, trying to make sense of it. God has not just prepared Philip for this encounter. He's been preparing this Ethiopian for this encounter as well. And Philip is just like, oh, this is brilliant. Jesus is doing this immense thing, and he's invited me to come and be a part of what he is doing. And I think if we can get this, this totally changes the atmosphere, if you like, in which we are looking to share our faith. Right? Because it's so easy for it. For all kinds of reasons, I don't want to talk to people, but it's all, you know, and if we do it at all, it's a duty, and it's miserable, and we hate it. And, you know, we feel sick before we do it, and afterwards we feel a failure, and nobody becomes a Christian anyway. Just the whole thing is like, oh man. Right? How different if we're like, hang on a minute, Jesus is out here looking to save people, and he invites me to come and be a part of what he's doing. That changes the whole mindset that we have as we come into this whole question of talking to people about Jesus. It's not something now that's done begrudgingly. It's brilliant. We get to be a part of what Jesus is doing. All right. And the reason I'm kind of dwelling on this is because we've got quite a lot going on around this at the minute. You know, we've talked a bit about the word one-to-one. We've got an Alpha course running online. We've got a Christianity Explored course running online. We've got a Discipleship Explored course running online as well. Just, you know, and next month we've got Rico Tice, who's, the face of Christianity Explored. He's the guy who developed that. He's a full-time evangelist based at a church in London. He's been doing evangelism on the front line for years and years and years. And he's going to be coming to MIE. I'm not sure if physically or virtually yet, but I'm doing some training with us next month. So Saturday the 20th of February, book that out in your diary and have a listen to Rico and what he's got to say. He's a good mate of mine. He's well worth listening to. And I really do recommend you just block out that day. And whether it's physically in a church building or whether we're having to log on and do it virtually, what he will share with us will be worth listening to. So, and I don't want you to feel that as a burden. I don't want you to feel that as something that we have to do because, oh, I suppose we better do this. It's like, no, but it's because we get to be a part of what Jesus is doing, saving people. You know, we talk about the global church. The church here is part of the global church. And it's so easy, isn't it, to hear stories from Nepal and go, oh, look what God's doing in Nepal. Isn't that brilliant? Actually, the same God who's working in Nepal is working here in Ipswich. And he's doing the same thing. He's wanting to save people and catch them up on what he is doing in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And he invites us, people like you and me, really ordinary people, he invites us to be a part of it. I think that's pretty exciting. But maybe it's just me.